Mr. A here, saying, how y'all doing?
Yo! Are you ready to rumble? Or should I say tumble? Cause I don't stumble or fumble like a cracker by a tumble. Standing on a drop,
and better than ever, helping you stay ready so you don't have to get ready. We don't want you sucker punched, so we are here each and every week helping you keep your guard up. I am Jeremy Lavelle with Remedy Pains Consulting at Pains Coach on Instagram and TikTok, and they just call me the Mouth of the South. And alongside of me is the Catastrophe Queen, the Claims Dame, Miss Jessica Odell, and as always, the voraciously veristic, the vibrantly virtuous, the one, the only, baby eight, how is everybody doing?
Good. It's all right. Well, we've had a crazy week of tornadoes, that's for sure. More are inbound.
What was it you sent me? Like just that one little storm system that passed through last week. So the last week of April, the kind of leading into the first week of May, there was something like 100 tornadoes that actually touched down.
127, I think.
In that storm system.
Yeah, 127.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Our prayers and
that was from an official source. It wasn't like from, oh my gosh, I've been counting myself. No, it was from like an official.
Yeah. Right.
Weather service and course, 127.
The last
tornadoes.
Episode that we recorded, I was talking to one of the trained spotters, not a train spotter, but one of the trained spotters for that sort of thing.
there goes a train. It's right there. I see it.
Train
I don't
number
think
52.
We really need. I see the train. And kind of how all of that went and understanding sort of kind of the network that goes on among the people that are boots on the ground. One of his guys, he actually sent me a link and he showed a video of a tornado that literally passed right in front of him. He was in his car. It's like and his wife is in the car. It's like going, are we going to be okay? He's like, yeah, we're fine. It's going the other way. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, no, I'm going to worry about it until I can't see it anymore. Because if I am in a place where I can actually visually see a tornado, I'm not going to be okay until I am out of line of sight. I don't want to be able to see a tornado. That's not a good thing. For fear that I end up on social media like one of those guys, it's like, did you see what that just, whatever.
Picked me up and shook me like a dog.
Right. Anyway, speaking of really fun things to do with tornadoes, do you have any fun facts, Baby Cakes?
I do have fun facts. Fun facts with Baby Cakes is brought to you by Inc., the best way to get paid after a property claim. Inc., save time, get paid. I did it.
You did it. There you go.
Okay, this one is going to be short. It's music again. There's a theme here. So in the early 70s, a lot of colleges were having anti-war rallies on campus, protesting the Vietnam War. And at one particular rally at Kent State, the National Guard started firing on the protesters. And 4 people ended up being killed. Two of the students, one of them named Allison Krauss, the other Jeffrey, I can't pronounce the last name, so I'm not going to try it. They had a friend named Gerald Casal, who was a musician on campus. He got together with another classmate named Bob Lewis, and they decided to form a band. And so they believed that the Kent State shooting was the devolving of society.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they called it. Mm-hmm. The devolution of society.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So then they decided to bring another guy into the band, Mark Mothersbaugh, who was at the time in a band with a girl named Chrissy Hind, who is the lead singer of the Pretenders.
Oh, okay.
I'm reading all this. Okay, so the idea of the devolution of society ended up inspiring their band name. So they took devolution and shortened it to Devo. And that is how Devo got their name.
Ah, very cool. And I feel really bad for Jeff. Can't pronounce his last name because so much for his legacy. You know, I mean, he had a legacy there because he was there at Kent State when all of the nastiness went down. And what hung was the devolution of society, or as we know it today.
Devo.
Devo.
Yep. Short and sweet. Now you know. Knowing's half the bullshit.
And there we go, guys. All of your music history right here in one place. You can learn how to work claims and find all of the interesting facts about how we come up with band names. So, like, if something's going to hit you right here on this show. And we're going to continue along with our theme. We kind of decided to keep going with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Last time we talked about the good, the bad, and the ugly of working claims in general. And so we're going to get into a little bit more of the good, the bad, and the ugly about working in other places. Guys, I want to remind you that this is not a debate show, as you well know. It is just me and Jess commenting on the stuff that you guys are slugging it out in each and every day, because it is you that is in the rumble. And we're going to come to the, we're going to come at you with three rounds. When you hear this sound, you know that the round has begun. And when you hear this sound, you know that the round is over. I am looking forward to this conversation because I have worked in other states and know what all of that looks like. We're going to get into the good right after this. Round one begins after this.
Public adjusters, listen up. It's Jeremy Lavelle, owner of Remedy Claims Consulting, host of The Rumble, and most importantly, your claims coach. Public adjuster training is one of the hardest things to find. Sure, you can take some online seminars, you can show up to conferences, but none of them tailor training just for you until now. Whether you need to learn how to estimate, scope, negotiate, or prospect, I can help you drill down on the skills you want to develop. Maybe you're just starting out and you need to learn the claims process from A to Z, or you're just wanting help on strategy on a specific claim. I can help you find the traction you were looking for and learn how to truly control the narrative in the ever-changing world of claims. You can reach out to me directly at 888-596-8772, or you can find me on the web at remedyclaims.com and just click Get Started. That's 888-596-8772 or remedyclaims.com and click Get Started. You can even shoot me an email at jeremy@remedyclaims.com. That's J-E-R-O-M. At remedyclaims.com. It's time to move your career to the next level.
Round one, the good about working in other states. I want to say the travel, but that's really not it. Because sometimes that's the biggest thing. I mean, you know, you get to, you kind of, I mean, kind of breaks up the monotony, right? I mean, what do you think is the good about working in some of the other states?
I think it's increased opportunities to work a, like a more diverse type of claim. I mean, not all of our structures are built the same in other states. And so you get kind of tunnel vision if you're only used to, you know, tile roofs, or you're only used to, you know, certain types of structures. And then when you get into, oh, wait, but we're up north, they have these other codes, they have these other things. It's just expanding your knowledge, basically. So you don't get stuck in or pigeonholed into any one thing. You're just constantly evolving.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is, I mean, so you kind of stole my good, but I might have a little bit of a different reason. No. I mean, what I like is because I worked in a lot of states as an independent adjuster, and working in other states, whether you're an independent adjuster or a public adjuster, there are some things that you can really draw out of it. One, is while we have like an international building code, or we have sort of like this groundwork of how what's okay and what is safe for the general public, when you go to other places, it is amazing how the construction changes. And so it really kind of broadens you on how, you know, different people do different things, and you can understand different construction methods, and where you are regionally speaking is very different. You know, I have done a fair amount of work in the Northeast, and I can tell you the way they do things there, because in Texas, we've got all kinds of room, right, Jess? I mean, we are a very large landmass. Yeah. And so we can spread out, and real estate is easy to come by. But when you get over to places like Rhode Island, where real estate is not so easy to come by, you know, things start looking a little bit different, and you have to account for, you know, real estate is a different value. So they start building vertically, or whatever the different solutions are there to accommodate for it. Also, weather patterns and climates and all of those kind of things also inform exactly how some of those construction methods go.
Well, even taking your measurements too, like especially for water losses, right? Your relative humidity in some of the southern states versus relative humidity up in the Northeast or the North. I mean, most literature out there says, you know, 20% is your sweet spot for drywall. Well, shoot, in Louisiana in July or August, it doesn't necessarily mean you've got a water intrusion problem if your readings are, you know, closer to, you know, 28, 27, yeah, you know, in that range. Right. I mean, you're going to naturally have some increased relative humidity. And if you're not thinking about that level of detail, I mean, I've seen people write up to gut a whole house not realizing, look, dude, the relative humidity is just naturally higher.
Here's a fun one. When I was a really young adjuster, I went and I was working an ice dam loss, right? And so I go, and this is in a basement, and of course they had an ice dam, and of course the water ran down the wall and into, and it went all the way below the floor, and it messed this stuff up. And I got down into the basement, and just based on gravity, I have my little cheap Home Depot moisture meter there as a young adjuster. I hadn't bought really expensive tools yet, and so I'm running moisture, and man, this entire room was absolutely saturated, and I couldn't believe it. So I write to gut all the drywall. Well, what I didn't know is that it was actually plaster, and plaster has a metal lathe on it, and it is going to light any moisture meter up like a Christmas tree. And so I just did not understand kind of how that whole thing worked. I didn't realize that's how moisture meters worked. I had no clue.
What is an ice dam for those that don't know, like me?
So an ice dam is, you know how you have snow that falls on the roof, mm-hmm. you know, and up north, obviously they get significant amount of snow on the roof, and they'll have gutters. And so as the snow underneath the top, so the snow melts from the roof up, not from the top of the snow down. Mm-hmm. And so as the water's running down, it'll run down, it'll fill the gutters, but the gutters, it can't really go anywhere. And so it forms this huge block of ice or ice dam. Oh. And at night when it freezes, you know what I mean? It freezes again, and so your gutters get frozen over, but the warmth of the house when the sun comes out still melts the snow underneath, and the water runs down and it has nowhere to go, so it works back up underneath the shingle, and it can cause a significant amount of damage. Lots and lots and lots of damage. Still one of my favorite claims to work, just between you and me, Jess, you know. Those are really interesting claims. And I have seen, you know, water do all kinds of crazy things, but I didn't know that plaster was, I guess technically I knew, you know what I mean? I just wasn't thinking about it. I thought plaster was like old right. school construction. And this was a newer house that I was in, and it never dawned on me. It's like, why would anybody plaster walls at this day and age, right? But they do it all the time up in the Northeast. And so one of the benefits about working in other states is you really broaden your construction technique. I think that that's really good. Another thing I like about working in other states is it also broadens your understanding about the different laws that are around, you know, and how they settle different claims or whatever. So, it just rounds you out as an adjuster so much better. You know, that's one of the things I like about it.
Same goes for just a diverse, you know, client base. I mean, you hit a hurricane in Lake Charles, there's a hurricane in Ida, there's another one, Ian, you know, all those different populations, all those different, it's different cultures, different, you know, just different cultures. If you like culture and cultural exposure, that's a great reason to work multiple states. Your client base is so different and you just get to meet a myriad of people.
It really is an opportunity to expand your network and work with different contractors and stuff. And so, as we know, as public adjusters, when you are pretty much you're solely responsible for finding, you know, the business that comes through the door. I mean, that's the hard thing about jumping on this side of the fence is the marketing effort, you know? And I will tell you, networking is an important part of it, and emphasis on the work part of networking. You've got to get out there and do it, and, you know, kiss hands and shake babies, you know what I'm saying? And so you've got to be able to put on that marketing and networking hat at some point in time to find the opportunities for work. You know, and I will tell you that's really something when you go and work in other areas, that is a good thing that you can do. You can also expand your opportunity to work with other public adjusters and learn some things yes. from them. That is such a good thing to do. And because there's just not a lot of us, you know, and if we're
attorneys too,
and if we're ever, yeah, attorneys too, if we're ever going to affect any sort of change on behalf or in benefit of the consumer, I mean, everybody knows this. We do have to work together, you know, and high tides raise all ships, you know? Yes. And so, I just think it's good because you learn kind of what different policies say from a public adjuster standpoint. You learn the different policies and the different languages. And I know that when I start seeing things like, because I work in other states, I know kind of what's coming and I'm not so surprised, you know, like little clauses, like you promise not to hire a public adjuster. And you realize that there are some states that have to put up with that shit, right? You know,
don't call the cops on us.
you know, and just the caps and the way that they approach it. I just had one of my coaching students call me up or send me an email. You know, they've got a professional assessment cap. They've got a cap on the mold and they've got a cap on the water. And, you know, caps are something that have become more prevalent over the past 4 or 5 years than they were really, just in the recent past. Caps weren't, like, I'm seeing caps on mitigation become more and more prevalent. You have a $5,000 mitigation cap, whereas the policy clearly used to say we will pay any reasonable cost, any reasonable construction cost to mitigate damage and to prevent further damage to the property. That's basically what most policy says and say at this point in time. And you know, now you're getting, and I see most of these caps and mitigation show up in Florida. And that's what I'm seeing is they'll cap it at 5,000, 10,000, something like that. So
I think if somebody is out there and they're thinking very long-term, and if they think they might want to ever be an educator or, you know, a guest speaker in an event or a coach, right, in this field. I think working multiple states strengthens your knowledge and your ability to answer those on-the-fly questions from students, audience, etc. So I think that going back to kind of what you said about rounding you out, I think that also helps prepare you for that side of the career, if that's something that interests PAs out there or
well, whoever, yeah, whomever. I mean, because I mean, Donna and I were talking the other day, and you realize when you become a public adjuster, it is the dead end job of all dead end jobs. There is no promotion, right?
Right, exactly. You hit the glass ceiling already just by being here.
Welcome to the top of the food chain. Aren't you glad you finally made it? Because, yeah, I mean, and if you want to be able to expand, sort of your earning potential or your income in some kind of way, you've got to find another source of revenue. So whether it is, you know, teaching and training others, consulting in other states, there's a lot of different things that go on there. And I know that we're going to get into the bad here in a second, but if you run into something that you don't know, that can get pretty difficult. And being aware of these things and that there are these absolute differences, it doesn't so much surprise you and shock you when it shows up in your home state, you know. And I know tons of people that work all over the nation. I am rather limited. When I first started, I wanted to work anywhere that would hire me as a public adjuster. I worked in Maryland, I worked in Pennsylvania, I worked as many places as I could absolutely work, because I was just trying to round out my business opportunities and obviously carve out a living. And that is one thing that you can do, and it's good that you have that opportunity. So that you can go, and most of them will reciprocate, especially if you have a Texas license. A Texas public adjuster's license is a very powerful license. Because, and I don't know why it appears to be a little bit better than other licenses. I don't know why it is more widely accepted from a reciprocation standpoint than possibly other flyover states, if you will. I don't know if the Iowa public adjuster's license will reciprocate to just about every state, but there's only like four or five states that my license wouldn't reciprocate to, which I believe is, as far as the license goes, Florida, New York, Hawaii, and I think California and maybe Alaska, but those are basically the only ones that I know of that don't absolutely 100% reciprocate, and where you actually have to go sit for the test, you know? And so, it does give you the opportunity to just kind of get out there and figure out what you want to do. You know, and it gives you a lot of those opportunities. So whether you have other business ties or other opportunities in other states and your ability to help people, it's a great way to go. I would recommend that you, if you're wanting to go work in other states, start with your neighbors. You know, if you're in Texas, go look at Oklahoma and understand, you know, it appears to be the same, but it's really not.
Nope.
It is not the same.
It's like Louisiana. I'm from Texas. I'll just go to Louisiana.
Different.
It's a whole different ballgame.
It is a completely different approach. I mean, would you say it's fair to say that it almost requires an entirely different business model than most public adjust? I mean, you're going to have to set up a business model that's a little bit different. Would you agree with that, Jess?
Yes, 100%. We used to have a lot of emphasis on the desk adjusting side when we first started out, but what happens is when you work in Louisiana, it's actually illegal to negotiate a claim as a PA, unless the laws changed since Hurricane Laura, Delta, and Ida. You cannot negotiate. You present your evidence, you present your estimate, you get one shot. You can still do rebuttals for the reasoning behind, but to you know, give concessions or whatever. Nope, not allowed to do that.
I will say this in Louisiana, for all of you people that are thinking about wanting to work in Louisiana, and I can imagine with the active hurricane season that a bunch of people are predicting right now, a lot of the predictors that I respect are predicting a very active hurricane Atlantic hurricane season. Jess, are you getting the same
Atlantic
thing?
Atlantic and Gulf.
Yeah, yep. The Atlantic and yep. the Gulf is going to be great. There's already, you know, I got some alert notification that conditions are very right for one in the Gulf right now. So yep. we'll see what happens. Now in Louisiana, what I heard is you cannot negotiate the value of a claim. You can talk about the policy. What you have to do, though, is you have to take the amount that's offered back to the homeowner, and the homeowner agrees or disagrees with it. And the other thing is that they're under no obligation to communicate with you solely. That's the other Correct. Difference. Like in, you know, I know a bunch of people get up in arms about, you can't contact my client. Well, guys, they really can, because they're still under contract with them. They're still paying premiums to them. They're still their client too, you know? And so how would you feel if the insurance carrier said, you can't contact your client, you know? And I wouldn't take that very well, but those are the things that you need to recognize. And it is good to round you out as an adjuster. The more I work out of state, and that it's going to lead well into round two, the more I like working in Texas, because we've given you the good. The bad is up next in round two, and it starts right after this.
One of the most difficult claims you can work is a contents claim. It requires extreme detail and significant documentation. Ricky McGregor with Monarch Claim Services is the expert you need on your side. She will handle on-site evaluation, inventory, photo documentation, pricing, and overall contents claim organization. She will work with your team beginning to end so you can focus on the rest of the claim. Do your client a favor and call Ricky McGregor with Monarch Claim Services. You can reach her at 515-783-1434. That's 515-783-1434, or find her on the web at monarchclaimservices.com.
Round two, the bad. First rattle out of the box. It can be, geography can really, really be a tough hurdle to jump. Even like I have worked a couple of different claims, like up in Oklahoma, but it's like 5 hours. The client that I had, who I spoke with today, actually lives about 5.5 hours from where I live, you know, and that was easy enough to get up to go and scope, and you're there, right? And you're good. And I'm going to get all of my scope, and I'm going to be able to write my estimate, and I'm going to turn this thing in. And then all of the sudden, the carrier hits you back with, well, we're going to have to do a reinspection, or we're going to have to come out here and look at that. And it's like, really? Yes. I'm going to have to do 10 and a half. I'm going to have to do an 11 hour round trip in a car where I don't have time or be able to do anything else so that I can meet with you for an hour.
Yep.
And oh, 10 hours. Way, we're going to send out an engineer. And I mean, are you going to tell your client, oh, it'll be fine, just let the engineer do whatever? No, because you have, I mean, I may be a little bit more white glove than other public adjusters are, but you've got to go and be at those meetings. You know, I have got, you know, I'm working an appraisal in Ohio, and I have to literally go and do an umpire, you know, a full panel inspection for an hour. I have to get on an airplane and spend 2 days of my time for a 1 hour meeting. And I'm going to tell you, for me, that's the bad. What's the bad for you, Jess?
I think some of it is just keeping up with all the different licensing requirements and continuing education credit hours and all the regulation side of it, keeping all of that straight. If you're detail oriented, it may not be that hard for you. But it's still, and it depends on how many states you work in too, how many of these multiple states, just remembering that, okay, this is a Florida claim and it is a hurricane claim. So I'm capped at 10% and I have to have a proof of loss done in 60 days, whether they ask for it or not. Have to.
And
okay,
an estimate.
But in Texas, it's not that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Proof of loss.
Right. Yeah, I gotcha. Right.
Photo report. The whole
thing.
You
just can't fill out the form and go, hey, I think this is going to be about $30,000, you know?
Right. Yeah, the whole package. But just remembering, certain states, you do have those timelines too as the PA. I mean, let's put aside the fact that the carrier has timelines. You as a PA also have timelines in certain states. And if you don't remember that, and it's day 62 or 61 even, hey, technically you just failed your client. So I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's one of those things that if you don't pay attention to, it sure could get bad.
Well, it really could. And, I think what you're kind of, leaning towards is state compliance can be very difficult to keep up with, making sure that you understand. And, I'm going to give you an example in Oklahoma. Now, I do believe this law has changed, but for the longest time, you had 1 year from the date of loss to file suit. And 1 year is not really 1 year. 1 year is really 10 months because they have to have a certain amount of time really to kind of get the claim prepared, to research the claim. You can't walk in at the 11th hour on, on the 363rd day and go, we got to sue these guys, because that's not really going to happen. You know what I mean? You're going to miss the date because it takes much longer for attorneys to even get that stuff together. So you're really looking at 10 months. Now, I do believe they have changed it to 2 years, but I don't know about the policies that were in force when the law changed or if it takes effect and all of that kind of stuff. So all you Oklahoma people, make sure you check it. And I am not an attorney, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other. But I know that there's that. I also know that other compliance issues, like in Louisiana, I remember when I was in IA, I would have to send in a report that basically detailed the value of every single claim I worked in Louisiana as an adjuster. And so sometimes the state reporting compliance issues can be a lot too, never mind keeping up with the licensing and the bonds. And some of these bonds are not cheap. You have to spend, there's a significant amount of financial output that you have to be able to provide, otherwise your license is no good there. And so it can be really expensive just to maintain a license there, never mind the travel that goes to it. So that's kind of a bad thing. And just also not really knowing all of the different local laws. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is how we do things, and this is how everybody in the state of whatever interprets this law. Well, I interpret it completely different. And, other states that I've worked in that have a similar law, both Ohio and Utah are both matching states, but how they interpret those laws locally, especially when you're coming up against an adjuster or you're coming up against maybe an opposing appraiser and how they interpret it, and then the local guy that you get to be an umpire. Trust me, I had to dig into an umpire just the other day that was rather scathing, and I don't typically like going into that mode, but it was absolutely necessary because at this point it didn't have anything to do with the interpretation of the law, but more how he and the opposing appraiser apparently colluded on some things. And so, but you're up against that. That's the bad thing, is that sometimes you're up against some people who know each other and they're a part of the local community and you're a foreigner in that situation. And so you don't have any idea about, is he your umpire? Yeah, that's not a good guy to go with because he's this thing and that thing and that other thing. And you never really kind of know what you're up against. And so you've got to be careful about those things. So you're not at home. And that can be a very difficult thing.
I think caveating off of what you just said, those nuances also expand into cultural, and by even like age, right? The different sensitivities of the clients. For example, you may go into an area where it's a largely populated area by the elderly that may not like to do everything over email, that don't like text messages at all. And so if you're one of those people that's used to working with, younger clients where everything is perfectly professional through text message, someone else that may be a little more old school may say, texting me is very unprofessional, or I like everything through email. Or some people are, I don't even have email. I can't electronically sign that document you want me to sign and send that picture and do that. I don't know how to do any of that. So there's that too. That's not, I wouldn't say it's a bad thing, but again, if you're not prepared with that level of customer service, it could be bad for you and for your business.
Right.
If you're not, you don't understand those sensitivities.
Well, exactly. Exactly. I mean, those are, I mean, it's anybody's guess on that. It's anybody's guess. The other thing is if you're not completely up to speed on what the construction methods are, you know, while I told you in the good round that it's really good to round you out, just remember what it takes to be rounded out. You're going to have to go through some of those pains and understand kind of what's going on. And, you know, like when you're like simple material identification. Now, I have worked a lot in Texas, and one thing I have never run into in Texas was an organic shingle. But I have run into them up in the Northwest. I've run into them up in the Northeast, and I didn't even know what I was looking at. I'd never seen shingles do something like this. You know, occasionally they may plaster a wall up in the Northwest or the Northeast that they will not do down here. You know, those are things that you can go in and you can misrepresent sort of the value or the loss of a claim. And God forbid that you go in and you misrepresent when you go to a carrier and go, well, I think it's worth $30,000. And they go, yep, we can go with $30,000. And then you get to your contractor and he's like, dude, that's going to be like 90, you know, and you just don't know. And so the bad issue is it can be really hard to network into those things or whatever. And so if you're going to go work in those areas and you don't have a mentor, that can be a really, really rough thing to do. And you are out there all by yourself, and the geography when you want to come home and all of those things pile in. And it's like, yeah, on occasion, the reason I even bring this up is Florida's got some very difficult laws for public adjusters right now, and it can be very difficult for them to make money. And so there's a lot of them I know of in Florida that are looking to come over to Texas and start working. The other thing is that catastrophe seasons are different. Right. So in Texas, the spring is when we get most of our work. You know, in Florida, the fall is when they get most of their work. In the Northeast, the winter is where they're going to have. And so these are things that are good to go ahead and develop. That way you're kind of, you have the opportunity to work, to bring in claims kind of all year round. But, you know, you can also get really divided and distracted by, you know, an influx of claims at home that you're having to work as those catastrophe seasons begin to sort of overlap. You're working hard on these hurricane claims and you're trying to get these hurricane claims at, you know, in Florida done, and you're a Texas public adjuster and you're trying to get all of these hurricane claims closed out. And all of a sudden hailstorms and different freezes may happen here in Texas, and lo and behold, now you've got these claims coming in, and it can get you overloaded pretty quick. So I will give you this one piece of advice: is you need to have a number in your head when you go into another place. And once you hit that number, pack the bags and come home, you know, because you don't want to overload yourself, and because you're signing on for taking care of that claim essentially from cradle to grave, not from cradle till you get bored or it gets hard or it gets difficult. You've got to finish and close out the claim.
Mm-hmm. I would say I struggled with whether inconsistent workload was a bad thing or downright ugly sometimes.
Well,
especially if you're a catastrophe type of person. You know, last year we didn't have any. Well, we did as a country. I mean, Hawaii, bless their heart, what happened to them was awful. You know, but we didn't have anything really that hit the continental U.S. And so all the catastrophe folks were just kind of twiddling thumbs like, what the heck? What do we do? I mean, this is what we love to do, and we didn't have one at all. So that could be bad if you're not in other states, or it could be downright ugly if that's the only state you work in, you know, is you're waiting on hurricanes. And, but I think it's more bad than just ugly, I would say.
And I think one of the bad things about working in other states is when you haven't established yourself in your home state. I think that is probably priority number one. And I think it's bad when we start trying to mine claims out of other areas because we're starving to death at home. You know, when I first started taking on coaching clients, I had a coaching client that was in sort of the Missouri area, I want to say, maybe not Missouri. I can't remember exactly. Well, she was in the southern part of Illinois is where she was. And she was remote and she was having a hard time getting business. And she asked me, do you think I should get licenses in other states? And I was like, not till you figure out how to work at home. Until you can figure out how to work at home. I mean, I really think working in other states should be an expansion rather than an extension or an effort to basically shore up a shortfall of income. You really need to be able to find things close to home. Now, some of you guys, like my good friend Jess, works and lives basically at the border of Texas and Louisiana, you know, and what is it? Is Dallas like 2.5-3 hours for you, somewhere in that neighborhood, something like that? The major, you know, there's a major metropolitan area for her with, you know, 9 million people in it that would be a great source of claims, but that could be really, really taxing. You know what I'm saying? Trying to get back and forth to these situations, you know, and just remember that it may make more sense for her to have a Louisiana license because she's closer to Shreveport. She's closer. She's closer to some of those areas like in a like down south or whatever, like, you know, Baton Rouge or what is that? What is that town that's basically you hang a ride at Shreveport and you head south. And it's the first town that you come to. It is escaping me, and I cannot remember the name of it.
Talking about Alexandria?
Gosh, but anyway.
Alexandria?
It doesn't really matter. Sometimes it makes sense for you to work in that other state. So it's kind of up to you and figuring out what you want to do there. No, but that's there too. I cannot remember for the life of me what the name of that town is, and I would know it as soon as I heard it. Gosh, I cannot. I want to say it starts with Lafayette. Lafayette. That's what I'm thinking of.
Way down south. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, way down south. Right.
Much further south.
So you never really can tell. So we've given you the good. You got the bad. Now brace yourself for the ugly because it's coming up next.
Are you a public adjuster, insurance roofer, or part of the restoration industry looking to streamline your first-party claims process? Let me introduce you to ClaimWizard, the ultimate tool that transforms the way you handle claims. ClaimWizard is designed with your unique business needs in mind. It offers a comprehensive suite of features that makes managing claims effortless. With its intuitive dashboard, you can easily track and manage every aspect of a claim from initiation to settlement. This powerful platform supports document management, automates workflows, and provides real-time updates, ensuring you stay ahead in the game. At ClaimWizard, they understand the importance of support. That's why they offer unmatched customer service with a team of experts who are always ready to assist you. Whether it's a technical query or guidance on best practices, Team Wizard is there to ensure your experience with ClaimWizard is smooth and efficient. Time is money, especially in the claims industry. ClaimWizard is engineered to maximize efficiency. It streamlines the entire claims process, reducing the time spent on paperwork and administration. This means faster claim resolution, increased customer satisfaction, and ultimately a boost in your business's productivity and profitability. So if you're looking to elevate your claims handling process, ClaimWizard is the solution. Try it today and experience a revolution in claims management. ClaimWizard, revolutionizing claims, handling one claim at a time.
Round three, the ugly about working claims in other states. What do you think's ugly, Jess? Of course, any state
I would have
I'm
to
in
say working multiple states it exposes you that much more to legal risks, right? Because you're not just focused in one state with one set of legal rules and whatnot. You're now in multiple states that your exposure is just wider or more increased, whatever word fits better. That's what I would say. It can get very ugly. Okay.
So, yeah.
Fines, penalties, loss of your license. If you get loss of license in one, that's it. They're all gone.
Well, I know that in the technology that we have with Zoom and things like that, I want to be clear about this, but working in other states can be the ugly part of it is if there's a lawsuit or something like that and you're stuck trying to travel for that lawsuit. Now, I realize we can do a lot of depositions via Zoom, and that is a very viable way to kind of get through some of those legal processes. But if for some reason you get sued or you need to sue somebody, you have to go all the way to that state and you are stuck, with the laws of that state and how that works. And again, you are not at home. You are Toto, we are not in Kansas anymore. And so that can get really, really ugly, especially if you're trying to finance that just from because most of us are all just single entity business owners. Now, I know that there are other firms and all of that, but most of the public adjusters I know are paid 1099. Very few of them are W-2. I'm not saying that there's none, but most of us are 1099. We all have to carry our own E&O insurance, and when those things happen, if a client gets upset with you because you messed up, you missed a tolling date and they weren't able to sue, guess who they're coming after? And you're going to have to go up there and answer. And especially, and it's not like you're going to be able to be sued from Zoom. Okay. I know that they did a lot of creative things in the pandemic, but I'm guessing that at some point in time, you may have to appear, and it really sucks to be sued and then have to pay for all of the travel that goes into actually getting there to answer any of that lawsuit, even if you win. And so that can be really, really ugly. And I'm going to tell you, the longer that I'm in this, the more to Dallas-Fort Worth that I am sticking to. I have found it very difficult to manage claims because as things get busy or you get a rash of things or you've got personal things that happen, those claims become very quickly is when a claim becomes out of sight, out of mind. They can feel mm-hmm. very, very ignored. I will give you an example, a personal example. I had a public adjuster who was not able to work in the state of Oklahoma call me and refer a contractor to me. And I spoke with this contractor, and she had three or four claims that she wanted me to come look at. And I was very honest with her. I said, look, I'm not going to have time to do this. And so I said, I can have one of my people go take a look at it. So one of the guys that I was working with, he wasn't licensed in Oklahoma, but he could at least go inspect it. And so I never really put my eyeballs on it personally, but I had all the faith in the world in the individual that I sent up there. But then just because it wasn't part of my regular sort of thing, those claims right. and, communication got tough. And as claims drag on and they begin to, for lack of a better word, perish over time, they get a little bit moldy. They get, and this homeowner is just sitting there trying to figure out, I've talked to people, I've hired experts, and nobody's doing anything. And that can get really ugly. And when you basically have taken on, even if you haven't been paid one single dollar, the point is that you said that you could help them. And when you don't carry, when you don't come through or follow through, there is nothing wrong with losing, right? It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose because you just never really got the claim turned around. You know what I mean? You never got it documented, turned in, submitted, paperwork signed, whatever it was that you had to do. That gets really ugly, especially for the homeowner, especially for your reputation. And one of the quickest ways to wreck a reputation is to go work in another state that you don't really have focus on. That gets ugly
right.
really fast. Really, really fast.
That's a great point. I'd say maybe another one. I don't like to use this C word, but basically, you know, increased competition. And I don't mean competition like in the traditional sense. I mean, your maybe saturated market would be a better term. Like if you decide to work in another state where there's already some pretty well-established public adjusters, you know, you just maybe it is that you would just have to try that much harder to make your mark. And sometimes that can get ugly. Or on the flip side, not knowing some of the key players or getting, you know, romanced, so to speak, or buddy-buddy with folks, and you don't really know them. And so you start to maybe do some business together and realize you don't share the same ethics. Right. And you don't know that until you fall on your face. And so that can get ugly.
Absolutely. I remember when Don and I swung the doors on Remedy Claims, I remember her Googling public adjusters in the area. And in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, man, when you Google it, I mean, you feel like you could walk out your front door and throw a rock and hit seven of them with the one rock. You know what I mean? Like it would bounce off a seven before it hit the ground, you know, and there are quite a few public adjusters in this Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I distinctly remember Donna saying, of course, this is 4 years ago, and she goes, how is it that there are this many public adjusters? And prior to meeting you, I never knew they existed. How is that possible? You know, and the reality is most of us get our business through networking. We don't put out billboards. We don't take out radio ads. We don't do any of that. What we do is we network. We know the contractor who knows the homeowner, and you know, and then you've helped that homeowner, and that homeowner goes, oh, if you've got an insurance claim, you got to call Jess or you got to call Jeremy. And it's this networker of referral based, so it's a referral based business, you know what I mean? And this is how it's built, because it's such a trust issue. It's such a huge trust issue, you know, when they're handing these things over. And it appears that there's no competition, and you don't run into people like, you know, at a restaurant, waiting for a table at a restaurant and go, hey, what do you do? Oh, I'm a public adjuster. Me too. You know, I mean, you just don't run into that.
No.
Right? You know, no. You know, it's like you could say I'm a real estate agent. Oh, I am too. I'm a realtor as well. Or I'm a chiropractor. So who am I? You know, I mean, that just seems to be a lot more ubiquitous. It seems to be a lot more ubiquitous in some of these other professions where I can tell you, not a week goes by that somebody says, I didn't even know you guys existed. I wish I had known yada yada. Somebody today is like, I wish I knew that you existed, not me, Jeremy, but me, public adjusters existed, because they had this terrible loss during the freeze of 21, you know, and there's all of these things that go on. And I forget my original point here, but if you're trying to come into this other state and you don't have like a solid network that you can establish yourself in, it can be really difficult to work in an area where there seems to be a lot of available claims. And I, you know, if they're not very well known in Texas, now I know when I was in Florida, I would see billboards for large public adjusting firms. I have seen them there, like in the Miami area quite a bit. You would see billboards for public adjusters, and they all just look like personal injury attorneys. You know, that's the kind of thing. We'll get every dollar you got coming. That kind of thing. But that's kind of the hard thing, is when you're wanting to find, if you can't network with contractors and you can't find new ones, you know, can be really difficult to find business. You've got this license, you've paid for this bond, you know, and you're just waiting on claims to roll in, and it gets hard. And that's why I say work with the neighboring states first and see if you can build them out there and see how well you do. I knew real quick, I can tell you, if you're a solo guy, it is going to get really ugly trying to manage claims that you have come in from home where you are networked, and manage claims that are only 2 or 3 hours away. It becomes very, very difficult. And I live close to the border of Oklahoma and North Texas. I live, like, our house is literally less than an hour from the Oklahoma border. it takes me longer to get to the south end of Dallas than it does for me to get to Oklahoma. Right?
I can see that.
You know,
yeah.
That is not an exact, there is no hyperbole there. That is absolutely 100% true. It takes me longer to get there. I went and looked at a claim yesterday where it took me longer to get home from that claim, and I sat in very little traffic than it would for me to get to Oklahoma. And so I went and got an Oklahoma license because I was more thinking about radius of where I operate. Well, then I learned about all the different Oklahoma laws and how the prompt payment statute. I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm working in Oklahoma. Well, they have 15 days and this day, this many days, and they got to, you know, pay in 5 days. Wait a minute, slow your roll. No, that's Texas. I realize it's only 30 minutes south of you where that's how things work. And if you misinterpret the laws, you want to talk about ugly, that's ugly. Because if you fall out of compliance with the laws, man, there is nothing that is going to get so frustrating and so terrible. And think about this, answering a complaint because you didn't know what the compliance laws were in the other state. Like, you have to have an established business with the service address before you do it. Yeah. Oh yeah. So the Department of Insurance isn't upset, but the Trade Commission or the people that allow you to do the Secretary of State within that state says, oh, you're conducting and transacting business is illegal. And I'm going to tell you, if one of those state agencies come down on you, they can come with some penalties a little bit on the stiff side, if you know what I'm saying. And you're looking at fines that are your annual salary sometimes, and it'll be way more than the claim that you're working. So you tell me, is it really worth it?
Right.
Because it can get, when you're having to pay out five-figure fines, that gets ugly. That gets real ugly real quick, and you're just exposing yourself to that. The more you work away from yourself, work away from your home base and the things that you know and the comforts that you have, and you start branching out because you need more business, realize what you're signing on for could get real ugly real fast and cost you a lot of money and possibly cost you your license in that state. And if you don't think Oklahoma is not going to pick up the phone and call Texas and go, this is what this guy did, you could be answering for some of those behaviors in your home state, not work there anymore either.
Yep. That's got to be something that's very ugly about it. If you work multiple states, if something goes wrong in one state, you couldn't just lose your license in that state. You would lose them in all.
Right.
So, and you can't say, I just didn't know. This is not my home state. And,
oh, well, bless
and
your
I know
heart.
There's lots of people.
Well, here, let us right. go ahead and take your license away from you until you figure out what you can know and what you do need to know.
I would definitely say, or my best advice would be, if you're considering going to another state, yep, starting with neighboring states would be a good start, but also start with maybe a contractor that you have known for years, that knows to be ethical, that knows, you know, very like-minded, and maybe you can, you know, cut your teeth on a few of their clients that may be needing some assistance.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, that's how I work in other states. That's literally, now I'm a lot more comfortable in Oklahoma than I was before. You know what I mean? But if I go to another state, I'm going to go find a firm or an established public adjuster in that area. And I'm going to be able to answer, you know, be able to call and ask him questions and get my questions answered in that situation. And so if you're going to work in another state, have somebody in that state that can make sure that you're remaining compliant, that can explain the laws, and you fully understand what your obligations are if you're going to work in that other state. And I know that it is becoming a very popular thing, because if you work in some of these states where the catastrophe season or the opportunity for claims to be created at any level in volume, you know, we're always going to have, you know, busted water heaters, and we're always going to have broken pipes, and we're always going to have these things that happen, fires, those kinds of things. Those can happen at any time and anywhere, but we all pay the bills on the catastrophes. I'm just saying, that's what we do. You know, we don't have any other choice. You know, any final thoughts there, Jess, on that, on the ugly?
I was going to say, and if you work in another state, find you a business attorney. Make sure your contract looks good. Make sure all that language is straight,
right?
Because that can also get ugly too.
The contract you use at home may not be a legal contract, That's the other thing. The biggest ugly is when you think you're compliant and you're not. Don't just assume you're client. Compliant. Yes. You don't guess at that. And you're signing on for what could be a very significant, you know, financial investment in order to get and be and stay compliant over time, and realize those laws change without notice. I mean, I cannot tell you the number of the times that the laws changed in Florida. I will help any public adjuster in Florida. I understand the laws there. I have zero desire to work there, though. You know, I will consult. I will push you in a direction. I will help you estimate. But when it comes to keeping up with the laws in Florida, it ain't worth it. That's just me. And God bless all you public adjusters out there in Florida that are working hard and making sure that homeowners are protected. I commend you, because that state is continually changing and it's rarely in our favor, you know. So continue to fight the good fight, guys. And if you want to work in other states, just realize it's not just a matter of finding a claim. There's a lot more to it. And hang in there. Any thoughts there, Jess? Any more thoughts?
I'm good.
Well, keep your head up, guys. Baby Cakes, you got anything?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we will be back next week. And in the meantime, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And we will see you on the next one.
Hand on the hammer, ready to ram you like the fire, slam a jammer. Yes, we're coming up, don't even try to diminish it. I won't start it, but I damn sure will finish it.